content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service. And this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with kind of a fun article from AARP, the magazine. And this is, we'll just start on it today, Who's the Muse? If you've ever wondered who was the inspiration behind these beloved popular songs, one author gets the scoop. You've heard these hit songs countless times. On one of those listenings, you might have wondered, who's that song really about? In the two volumes of my Anatomy of a Song books, I interviewed singers and songwriters and got the real stories behind 100 popular tunes. Turns out, they are populated with lovers, rivals, drifters, and other colorful characters. So we'll just start on this today and then read bits and pieces from time to time. We're going to begin with Love's in Need of Love Today, Stevie Wonder, 1976. Wonder. I wrote the song's basic idea in late 1974 in my hotel room in New York when Yolanda Simmons was pregnant with our daughter, Aisha. The concept I had in mind was that for love to be effective, it has to be fed. Love by itself is hollow. I didn't have all the words for the song at first, only the title phrase. To this day, I never sit down and formally write songs. They emerge from the process of listening to what I'm doing on the keyboard. I get my inspiration from experiences that can be painful or beautiful. Life is endless, so there will forever be songs about things that happen in life. But hearing the song back in the studio hurt because it was so emotional. When I performed it in New York recently, I broke down. I've seen people come and go and live and die, cry and laugh. It all came rushing back. Then there's First City by Loretta Lynn, 1968. Lynn. The inspiration for First City was a girl who had moved close to our home so she could make a play for my husband. Oliver Doolittle Lynn. I could see what was going on between them when I saw them together. The last straw was hearing rumors about them while I was recording in Nashville. Driving home that afternoon in my Cadillac, I was real mad, and I wrote Fist City in my head during the 75-mile trip. All I could think about was what she was doing to my family and what I wanted to say to her. The further I drove, the madder I got. Du and I never did talk about the song and the meaning of all the words, but I sensed he knew exactly what it was about. I'm sure the woman I had in mind knew the song was about her. After the recording came out, she stayed away for a good long time. And finally for today, She's Gone by Hall and Oates, 1973. John Oates. One night in Greenwich Village, I ended up at the Pink Teacup on Bleecker Street at 2 a.m. In came this gal in a pink tutu with cowboy boots but no coat. Hardly anyone was there, so we started talking. She said her name was Freddie Littlebird. Hey, it was the early 70s. At some point, I asked her if she wanted to get together that Sunday night on New Year's Eve. She said yes, but on Sunday, Freddie never showed. She was gone. Bummed. I sat on the sofa strumming my acoustic guitar and started singing a folky refrain about being stood up. I saw Freddie here and there in the village in the months ahead. I never asked her why she didn't show New Year's Eve. By then, Daryl and I were touring. Talk about she's gone. I was gone. The past didn't matter much anymore. Now, from AARP The Bulletin, 3 years in, how the pandemic has changed our lives and how it hasn't. So we started this earlier, and let's move on with it. We're going to start with a sidebar article. Beyond COVID, a Look Ahead. This is by Ashish Jha, MD, White House COVID-19 Response Coordinator. How will we be better prepared for the next virus out of nowhere? Because of this crisis, we'll have better surveillance capabilities for diseases. If a new pathogen comes up, we'll test wastewater around the country and figure out exactly where that pathogen is spreading. In early 2020, we didn't even know where the virus was. Developing the vaccines in under a year was a miracle of science that saved millions of lives. We still have to do better in the future. We'll want to build vaccines in 4 or 2 months rather than 8. Question: going forward, how did the government address the distrust, ignorance, and disdain many people have for science? Or how should they address that? You build trust by being trustworthy. When people don't trust the information they're getting, they go looking for alternative sources. And that creates the context for misinformation and disinformation to really thrive. How do we fix that? Number one is reminding Americans that science is not a destination, it's a process. What scientists knew about the virus at first is certainly different than what we know about the virus today. And that doesn't mean we were wrong then or we're wrong now. It just means science is about the evolution of knowledge. Question: should we anticipate a future in which new viruses will steadily emerge? The short answer is yes. Between globalization, industrialization of countries, and climate change, we're going to see more disease outbreaks. We may see more pandemics. That's why it is super important for private companies and governments to continue making investments in diagnostics and treatments and vaccines. Nursing homes got hit hard during COVID. What are the lessons for the future? One of the most important systemic changes we can make is improving indoor air quality in nursing homes. That will lower the burden of respiratory pathogens, not just COVID, but flu and RSV and parainfluenza. Second, we must improve access to quality care in nursing homes. Long-term care facilities, assisted living, and other places older Americans live. Nursing homes are struggling with getting tests and treatments to the right people, and right now, 300 Americans a day are dying. A vast majority of them are older Americans. There's no reason for that. And finally, what gives you hope as you look ahead? The sense of responsibility we have for older people. It would have been easy to say, hey, if you're 25, why are you even getting a vaccine? You may not need it. But millions of people said, well, I may be visiting my mom or grandma, and I don't want to bring the virus to them. As a country, we don't just do things for ourselves. We do things for the people we love. With that approach, we can get through this crisis. Next in the article, travel and leisure. Life's pleasures, food, flights, and entertainment returned. Though staffing remains a huge issue. Sports never gone roared back. The pandemic bubble, in which players quarantined together, tested constantly, and played to near empty arenas, saved sports and kept fans in their seats, albeit at home, says Abraham McCorum, publisher and executive editor of Sports Business Journal. With stadiums full again, we're seeing changes that will likely linger. Paperless ticketing, refreshments ordered through apps and screens, and a better overall home viewing experience. Movies and weddings are on the upswing. After countless nuptials got bumped in 2020 and 2021, the number of planned U.S. weddings in 2022 jumped to 2.5 million, up from 2.1 million in 2019, before the pandemic. Hollywood is doing well, too, with some big caveats. Theaters sold around $7.46 billion worth of tickets in the United States in 2022, led by mega sequels to Top Gun and some beautiful blue creatures in Avatar. Speaking of screen time, it's off the charts. The average time a U.S. adult spent looking at a screen each day increased 60 to 80% during the pandemic. That's everything from phones and video calls to the television shows and movies we binge. One view is that we have the world at our fingertips, so why go anywhere or do anything? Travel has resumed. We are eating out again, visiting faraway friends, taking family trips, activities that were unthinkable even during parts of last year, especially for older folks, says Pauline Frommer, editorial director of Frommer's Guides. After years of isolation, multi-generational travel is up 50%. Even cruise lines, the original petri dish of the coronavirus, are booking up again, and older travelers are going the extra mile. Nearly 40% of people 65 or older say they now prioritize traveling out of state, and more than half those travelers prioritize trips to visit family or friends. At the same time, smaller cities are thriving. The pandemic provided a necessary reset button for many destinations, says Bert Sperling, founder of the website Best Places, who says the recent influx of new populations in towns across America means things are a lot more cosmopolitan in places like Billings and Missoula and Boise than in 2019. You can get a great cappuccino where you couldn't get one before. However, movie going is still down, 34% from the pre-pandemic year of 2019. That problem hasn't been only a fear of crowds, but a movie shortage, as many films, including most smaller independent films, went straight to streaming and productions in general were slowed down by COVID. And although hotels and restaurants are busy again, widespread and continued staff shortages means you might not see daily housekeeping or receive the attentive service you did before 2020, Frommer says. Ditto unreliable flights or counting on your luggage to arrive safely. Witness the Southwest Airlines debacle this past holiday season. Travel insurance is suddenly becoming for cruises and vacation rentals, she says. Now let's look at retirement plans. We're focusing hard on money, but cracks appear in the nest egg. Today, financing our post-work years is focus number one. Across four generations surveyed in a recent poll, 76% said their life priorities changed due to the pandemic, and 56% said they were prioritizing retirement savings. And, regardless of political affiliation, Social Security is a unifier. Retirees this year are getting an 8.7% Social Security cost of living adjustment, the biggest in decades, which is fortunate. 40% of boomers said they expected Social Security to be their primary source of retirement income. Savings found some renewed vigor, too. More than 4 in 10 near retirees in one 2021 survey said that they had started saving more since the pandemic began. However, retirement has been postponed. Millions retired early during the pandemic, but with a tight labor market and rising prices on almost everything, unretiring is now in vogue. So is extending one's retirement horizon. COVID prompted about a third of Americans to change the age they anticipated retiring, with nearly 40% of respondents in one survey adding 3 to 5 years, and 35% adding nearly a decade of expected work years. Even as the average American nest egg fell by 11% in 2022 to $86,869, down from $98,800 a year earlier, according to another survey, the amount Americans think they need for retirement increased by 20% over that same period to at least $1.25 million. Rethinking how we think. We're feeling good, though the divide with others is real. Fear of death has dropped and happiness has risen. Perhaps the most hopeful news 3 years after the start of the pandemic is that older people managed to stay happiest during those years. Recent surveys consistently show that compared with younger populations, people 60 plus score more positively on a wide variety of daily emotions. In fact, about 2 in 3 of the oldest adults, 80 and older, say they are living their best possible life, or close to it, compared with just 1 in 5 younger adults, according to recent National Geographic and AARP research. The pandemic showed how important the perspective of age can be, said Karstensen from the Stanford Center on Longevity. Even the fear of death is decreasing with age in the time of COVID. The study shows, while more than 20% of people 49 and younger say they now fear death extremely or very much, those numbers fall to 10% among respondents ages 70 to 79 and 4% in those 80 plus. Stress has actually decreased. In a well-publicized study last fall, scores of young adults reported being moodier and more prone to stress during the pandemic. But notably, for older people, that just wasn't true. In fact, older people reported getting less neurotic. I think because older adults have so much more stability in their personality, social support networks, and day-to-day activities, they were disrupted much less than younger people, says Angela Sutton, the Florida State University researcher who oversaw the study. However, even after all this upheaval, we remain a country firmly divided. When the nonpartisan Pew Research Center surveyed people in 17 countries, Americans were the most likely to say their society was split along partisan, racial, and ethnic lines. The U.S. also reports more religious division than almost any other country surveyed. And if all this information isn't troubling enough, all the misinformation should be. Rumors about unproven miracle cures, claims about dangerous technology lurking in masks, and about the efficacy of vaccines. False information takes us back a step for every step forward, says Guriasio, and older people cannot afford that. And this article was by David Hochman, a contributing editor for AARP, the magazine. He's written cover stories on the pandemic and on climate change for the Bulletin. Now looking at AARP, the magazine, Cash, a Modern User's Guide. Here's everything you need to know about the legal tender in your wallet, the savings in your accounts, the digital payments at the checkout counter, and the old coins in your drawer. Learn how to fend off inflation's sting, protect yourself from a cash crunch, go electronic with your money, and maybe even hit the jackpot. So we have part one here, the number to shoot for. Ready cash dollars you can quickly pull from a checking, savings, or money market account is key to financial security and a good night's sleep. Here's how much of it you need. The article here is by Lynn Asenoff. Cash on hand. You need it for daily cups of coffee, weekend grocery runs, and monthly utility bills. You need it for major outlays, like a new car or a home remake. And you need it for emergencies, repairs, medical bills, natural disasters, and more. But how much cash? That's the tough question. Not enough in your wallet or in the bank, and every curve life throws you becomes a financial crisis that could force you to take on new debt or cash out investments at a loss. Too much set aside, and you risk lost opportunities. Family vacations never taken, long-term investments never made. The right amount of cash on hand is one of my clients' most common concerns, says Stephen Tallheimer, a financial planner in Silver Spring, Maryland. The number depends on many factors, including your income, family needs, life goals, and whether you're retired, plus your worries, if they're keeping you up at night. It's a very individual thing, Tallheimer says. Not sure about the liquid access assets you need? You can get a good idea by making a few simple estimates outlined in these steps. Step 1. Tally your monthly expenses. Total up all your outlays, whether they're household supplies, dinners out, or utility bills. You'll find the numbers you need by looking at recent credit card bills, bank statements, and pay stubs. Go long. The more months you look at, the less likely you will be to overlook mandatory expenditures that are not monthly, like insurance premiums, tax payments, and oil changes. The bigger the time period, the better the data, says Kristen Pugh, a private wealth manager at Creative Planning in Atlanta. The result is the amount of money you realistically need per month, on average, when things are going well. Step 2, decide what's optional. The goal here is to find some flexibility in your budget for two different types of financial crises you might face. One is what's known as a supply emergency, an interruption in your income. If you're still in the workforce, that might be losing your job. If you're retired, that could be a hit to any source of income you depend on to supplement Social Security payments. The other type of crisis is a demand emergency, a large unexpected expense. In either case, it's important to know how much money you would really need to get by each month. To do that, return to your list of expenses and divide them into those that are essential, rent, food, medicine, and those that are not, streaming services, hobby costs, various memberships. Making that distinction is a very personal process. Would you want to cut back on the birthday presents you give, the haircuts you get, the trips you make? Some people say Netflix is pretty essential, says Dana Levitt of Paragon Financial Advisors in Newton, Massachusetts. What's important is that you're honest with yourself. Once you tally what's cuttable, subtract that number from your current monthly spending. The result is your monthly number for getting by. Step 3. Imagine your supply emergency. Maybe you're dependent on a job to supplement your Social Security income, and that job goes away. Or maybe the retirement account you're pulling money from has fallen precipitously in value, and you think it doesn't make sense to take further withdrawals. If you're optimistic that you'll eventually find a new source of income, as opposed to having permanently to adjust your spending downward, consider how many months you think it would take to get your income going again. For years, financial planners have generally recommended having enough cash to cover 3 to 6 months worth of expenses. That's based on the amount of time advisors say it will likely take to find employment after a layoff. But if you're over 70, you're less likely to be looking for a new job. Rules of thumb are a good starting point, but each situation is going to be different, says Judith Ward, a senior financial planner at T. Rowe Price. Whatever number of months you select, multiply that figure by the amount of money you need per month to get by during a supply emergency. That's how much money you need to be safe. See where to keep your cash right now. And that's an article we get to next time. Let's go to step 4, budget for surprises. A demand emergency, a broken major appliance, for example, or a trip to the ER can be devastating. But if you have enough money in the bank to cover a few months of lost income, you probably have enough to cover a sudden expense as well. A 2020 paper written in collaboration with AARP found that having $2,500 in a bank account correlated with a lower chance of financial distress years later. Some retirees aim for enough cash to cover a full year of living expenses, with at least part of that sum in accounts from which they will still have to take a required minimum distribution, such as a 401k or a traditional IRA. The minimum age for taking RMDs just rose to 73 for people born on or after January 1, 1950. That lowers the chances they will have to sell investments when they're down to cover expenses or to take an RMD. Think of these funds as something different from an emergency fund. Instead, you might consider them a liquidity bucket. In the words of Anthea Perkinson, who operates Monterey Associates, a financial planning firm in Pelham, New York, your goal with such funds is to make sure there's money available when you need it. Well, there's a few more issues in this article, which we will get to next time, including the kind of major one that says your cash now, where to keep it. So that's for next time. And we have time for one or two money-saving tips. Get Prime Day specials, deals. This is for online shopping. It's Amazon Prime's biggest sale of the year, usually held over the summer. Not a member? Sign up for a free trial to take advantage of the savings and then cancel it once Prime Day has passed. If you're not sure whether a price is truly a deal, use the Camel 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 app, which will show you an item's price history on this site. Get outlet deals. You no longer have to schlep to an outlet mall to get deals at factory stores. Instead, you can get outlet deals online from retailers like J. Crew, factory.jcrew.com, Chico's, chicosofftherack.com, and Zales, zalesoutlet.com. Simply do an online search for your favorite store and the word outlet to see if it has online shopping. Delete your saved credit card information. Online retailers want it to be as easy as possible for you to check out, but adding a few steps to the process may make you less likely to give in to impulse purchases. And then we have a few items here that are just for AARP. Restaurants. AARP members can get a 15% off at Denny's, 10% off at Moe's, Southwest Grill, McCormick & Schmidt's, and Corner Bakery. Walgreens. Link your AARP membership and My Walgreens accounts to earn 10% Walgreens cash rewards on health and wellness products. Car rentals. Up to 30% off and free upgrades when available at Avis and Budget. Prescription savings. Save at CVS and some other pharmacies through AARP prescription discounts provided by OptumRx. Well, folks, we have come to the end of our time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.